Thank you. So my name is Anne Keeling, Senior Fellow, Women in Global Health. I've had a long career in international development, particularly in gender equality and health, and have dealt with issues of violence against women in various contexts. So that's really where I come into this issue. So we're launching this new report, Health 2, because violence and sexual harassment against health workers, especially women health workers, is a long-standing and really serious issue. Male health workers are also subject to violence, but the sexual harassment and sexual violence is mainly directed at women. It has very serious impacts for the women concerned, but it also has impacts for health systems. It's underrecorded, it's underreported, and it's not often sanctioned. It's an abuse of power and it can be stopped. So we want to really bring this to light so that we can catalyze action. Sexual exploitation, abuse, and harassment of health workers is very common, particularly some forms of violence against health workers and sexual harassment of women health workers. The figures are very difficult to get. There are no global figures, and there are some small studies of, say, nurses in one country or health workers in another country. Some of it is not disaggregated by sex, but what we do know when we speak to women health workers is that it's extremely common. They're facing violence and sexual harassment from three sources: from male colleagues, amazingly, I think, from male patients, and also from men in the community, depending on what their jobs are, but particularly women health workers who are outreach workers. And it's almost normalized. It's almost seen as a very unpleasant part of the job. That women health workers have to manage. And we think that's just totally unacceptable. We took the approach of storytelling because the data just isn't there. And when the data isn't there, then this very widespread abuse is simply invisible and policy action isn't taken. We also felt that with storytelling, real abuse against real women actually becomes real. If you read a bunch of statistics that say, maybe there were five cases of sexual harassment, it's not nearly the same as reading some of those women's stories about the things that actually happened to them in their own words. Quite often, sexual harassment is trivialized. It's treated as something that's, not very serious. It's just a bit of banter. It's just a bit of a joke, and women can't take a joke. But when you actually hear what happens to women, you realize that, this shouldn't happen to anybody when they come to work to do a serious job. There's no reason. There's absolutely no justification for the sort of abuse that women are facing routinely. And real stories bring that to life. I think there are three top causes. So, from the data that we have, it seems that sexual harassment of women in the health sector is actually more prevalent than it is in some other economic sectors. And we believe that's because medicine is very hierarchical. This is an abuse of power. It's an abuse of power more than it is motivated by sexual attraction, for example. It's an abuse of power because of where women are in the health workforce, and that's really the second point, that this is a reflection of gender inequality. It's about where women are in society, and it's about the lower status jobs that women tend to have in the health workforce. And that means that women are in a weaker position to complain. when they are sexually harassed. And I think the third point is that men do this because they know they can get away with it. That if men knew that they would be sanctioned, that male health workers, senior male health workers knew that they would lose their jobs, and that they would be publicly shamed, then they almost certainly wouldn't do this. It's because they know they can get away with it, that women are in a weaker position to complain, and that's why they do it. So for women affected by sexual harassment, sexual violence, there are all sorts of physical and psychological harms. And the psychological harm can manifest itself in stress, depression, absenteeism. And it really breaks the bond of trust with an employer, because women who are harassed at work and don't have any form of redress feel that they may face retaliation if they do report, or there's just no mechanism for them to report. They lose trust completely in their employer, because everybody should be receiving that, basic protection and safety from their employer. So the secondary effects are really upon health services. This is not just a women's issue. It's actually something that affects all of us, because women are the majority of health workers. They're 70% of health workers. They're more than 90% of nurses. If those women that we all rely on for our health services are feeling distracted, they're unhappy, their morale is low, then you can't expect them to be doing their jobs to the in the best way that they would want to do as good professionals. So this actually has an impact on health systems as well, and everybody's healthcare. And it can have a direct impact, because where cases are taken forward in some systems where it's possible to do that, women may end up winning, very large sums of compensation against their employers. So there can be real costs to employers and cost to health systems for inaction, for actually not doing something about this. Last year, we've sort of had a landmark step forward, and that was when the International Labour Organization launched a new global convention, that's Global Convention ILO 190, on work-related violence and harassment. That's the first time that we've ever had any sort of global standard that says that work-related violence and harassment is a human rights abuse, and actually details what that abuse is, and how it should be eradicated. Around 20 countries have now ratified that convention, and we're urging all countries to ratify that convention to bring their domestic law into line with the convention, and make sure that women have the protection of law. Because in many, many countries, sexual harassment at work is not even a legal offence. So women don't even have the basic protection of law. So that's one thing that is, at global level, a very important step forward, and then will trickle down into change at national level. The other thing that is happening is that women are gathering together, just as with the Me Too movement. Women are talking more about the abuse that they are suffering. This is why we're calling our report, and the platform that we've put forward to collect the stories. That's why we've called it Health Too, because this issue is coming out of the shadows, and not only in the health sector, but obviously in other sectors too. And eventually that will make this sort of abuse less normalized, and less socially acceptable. I think starting from the global, as I said, we would want every country to ratify the convention, And then we would want every country to review their legislation, employment legislation, employment rights in the light of that convention. And then we want that to go down to every single employer to put policies in place that enabled women or anyone subject to violence and harassment to be able to report that, be taken seriously, remain an anonymous for protection if needed. And we would want to see that feeding through into perpetrators being sanctioned with serious sanctions that then become an object to lesson to other would-be perpetrators. So this has got to go right down from global level right down to institutional level, and then it has to go right down to the personal level, so that there's a culture change, and men feel that they actually don't have a right to abuse women in this way.